Hey, back again, once upon a phrase. I am your host, Jason.
And your other host, Lisa.
Wherever you're listening, Google, Spotify, YouTube, what have you, remember to rate and review the show for us.
Also, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Phrase.
I'm not going to edit out the long pause before you shouting out our Instagram. I'm going to let everybody think you forgot what our Instagram was called, even though
That's not very nice.
it's just named after the show. But Lisa doesn't know how to edit the show, so I'm definitely leaving that long pause in there.
Hey, it's been a long day.
Yes. And speaking of a long day, if you've had a long day and you don't want to cook, Fat Chris's Pizza and Such, they're the show sponsors for all of season two. They're really great, whether you go inside, pick up, delivery, dine in, just anywhere in the Andersonville area, they got you.
So today it's a sad moment here. It's our season finale of season two. We are doing Medieval Part Two.
So, the medieval show from season one was one of our most popular ones. And I remember thinking, oh, we've got so many phrases. We've got to do a part two as soon as we do season two. And then we just kind of got caught up in other things. So, it's only fitting that Medieval Part Two is now our season finale.
Some other things just to mention for season three, we will be back in the fall. The only slight change we'll have is instead of just releasing bi-weekly, we're going to release on the 1st and the 15th of each month.
Yes, and if you're wondering, hey, what's with the end and why aren't they coming back till fall? You need to remember, we're teachers and we don't work over the summer. So we're taking a well-deserved break and we actually are going to work over the summer. We're going to record a bunch of episodes, hopefully bring on some guest hosts. We've already got one longtime listener interested. So Jesse, be ready. You're up for hopefully the opening episode of season three. But before we get started, since we're shouting out fans, I just quick shout out to Broadview, Oregon. We have access to some metrics and we can kind of see, like how many streams and, what's going on with the podcast. And we noticed the big spike in the area of Broadview over the last, I don't know, probably month or so. So thank you for listening, Broadview, Oregon. If you're one of those people, again, hit us up on Instagram and, give us a shout.
All right, so I'm gonna start us off with the phrase kick the bucket. Are you familiar with this one?
I think it just means to die, right? Unless I'm
It
misinterpreting it.
does. It does, but
Okay.
when looking up this one, I was very curious as to know what the bucket has to do with this. Okay, I mean, the phrase just doesn't make sense to, I wouldn't correlate it with to die.
So this is a, and I assume because it's on this episode, it has something to do with medieval origins. But this is probably one of my favorite things about this podcast is we just say things. As people, we say things all the time that we know what it means, but we have no idea why we say that. And I think kick the bucket's a great example of that. Like, how does this mean to die?
So there are two possible origins for this one. Or actually three technically. So one of them possibly is that it refers to the medieval way of hanging people. And that they would stand on a bucket when they were being hung and you'd kick the bucket from under them, which would obviously cause them to dangle and die.
Okay, Lisa's visibly uncomfortable talking about this, but without even hearing the other two phrases, that's gotta be it. Like, how else can kick the bucket mean death?
That one makes the most sense. The other two, I can see where they were going, but I don't necessarily think that they're the most possible origin. Another one is when you are slaughtering animals, the wooden frame that is used to hang them from by their feet is referred to as like a bucket, and as they like spasm and essentially die hanging there, they refer to that as them kicking the bucket,
All
which
right.
doesn't make the most sense.
Well, I know that thing you're talking about. A lot of like hunters use it. It's a, like, in hunting areas, or some people have one in their backyard, depending on where you live. But I'd be interested if any of our listeners are hunters and this makes sense to you. Like maybe when you heard kick the bucket, you thought, oh yeah, that thing we have out back. Let us know, because I never would have pieced two and two together for that theory. All right, but you mentioned a third one. What is it?
So the other one isn't, I guess I looked it up and it was sometimes referred to as meaning kick the bucket, but it doesn't literally mean kick the bucket. So I guess when someone would die, they would put a bucket of holy water placed at their feet so that mourners could splash holy water onto them. So it describes a bucket at your feet, but not necessarily literally kicking the bucket.
Yeah, I think that might be one of those things that's like loosely related. So maybe people tried to build a bridge that wasn't there.
But I think that first one makes the most sense.
So what I'm thinking is, and when you see it on TV and movies, there's always that big stage, right? In medieval times when they're hanging somebody, and then the guy with the mask, like he pulls the lever and the stage opens, and you know what I mean? Like, they couldn't have had that many stages built with that contraption and a door that opens, a trap door. I would imagine most people in medieval times stood on a bucket. Right? I mean.
Yeah, and just a side note, I'm just thinking because we're watching a lot of like Yellowstone and the side shows that when they were killing people in that sense, they weren't using a bucket, they would kick them off their horse.
Yeah, or I've seen like a chair or a stool in like some other t
In other
movies.
movie, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it refers to it might have the origin might have started with literally kicking the bucket from under someone's feet, and then as times went on, whatever thing they were using to stand on or to balance themselves just kicked from under them. All right, what do you got for us?
So, this is a phrase that I would never have sort of connected with the medieval times, but it's the phrase to break the ice. So, Lisa, what does it mean to break the ice? This is, you know this, right?
Yeah, I think that's something that if any of you know Jason, Jason's really good at breaking the ice.
Yes, Lisa is not. So,
I'm a little awkward when it comes.
yeah, I am. I'm the icebreaker. So it's to initiate
That's why I keep
conversation.
them around.
Yeah, it's because you don't want to talk to people. Yeah.
Sometimes, I don't know.
So it's these social settings, right, where you got to talk to people. So this is a phrase that, I, like you said, I'm very good at, but I also use a lot, especially as teachers. What's one of our first activities we do at the beginning
The
of every
icebreaker activities.
icebreakers? Yes, right? So what this actually dates back to is medieval traders. They would still need to trade, right? Especially depending on their routes and, how far north they were going. Some of the waterways were covered in ice. Well, money still needs to be made, right? So they would literally break the ice, and it was a way to sort of forge a path through those frozen waters. But it was difficult. It was very difficult to break the ice in a sense that your ship could go through. So it just sort of ended up taking on this meaning where I'm going to start something new and difficult, right? Which is talking to strangers, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you just said you don't like to break the ice, right? When you're in a room full of strangers at a party and you don't know them, it's difficult, right?
I would when I'm in a room full of strangers, I usually gravitate toward Benji, and where Benji's hanging out with the kiddos, it's easier to break the ice with children than it is to break the ice with adults.
Yeah. And sometimes, like how the ships did this, they would have a smaller ship in front of them, and that smaller ship would be the one actually out there, breaking the ice. So that way the big ship could sort of get through.
Okay.
And that's like your conversation skills, right? Before you do anything big, before you do anything important with somebody, you gotta have those smaller conversations. You gotta break the ice, right? It does make me think of a hilarious pickup line. You ever, I don't know if we saw this movie together, but I stole it from a movie. When he goes, you go up to a girl and ask, hey, how much does a polar bear weigh?
How much?
Enough to break the ice. Hi, I'm Jason. Oh, guys, she's rolling her eyes so hard. We got to get a stream going for season three. The
No.
amount of times this lady rolls her eyes at me.
He's so cheesy.
That was good. Yeah,
No.
but so, like, in a sense, you're breaking down barriers or obstacles, by using communication skills. Like, as teachers, we use icebreakers at the beginning of the year to make our students feel comfortable and get to know each other. But again, this goes all the way back to the medieval times. We're talking the 1500s, and again, I mean, if you've been listening at all, you know how much we like to blame the media for stuff, right? But once this started showing up in print, and this was in, books and authors way back in the 1500s, we're using this historical ref, to break the ice. not as, you know, ships forging trading routes, but as an actual way of like starting up a conversation. I mean, it was set in
It gained
stone.
momentum,
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. And then, as always, which, you know, it's gonna happen a few times this episode, I think, we can thank the one and only Billy Shakespeare, right? Taming of the Shrew. In, you know, one of the scenes, he says, "And if you break the ice and do this feat, achieve the elder, set the younger free." Right? And I mean, we thought it was good in the 1500s. Once Shakespeare says it, that's it, right? That's in history forever.
That's true.
So, all right, keep us going. What do you got for us?
All right, so my phrase is throw down the gauntlet.
Oh, I've thrown down the gauntlet many a times.
I have not, but
She has not.
I avoid this at all costs. So it means to issue a challenge.
Yeah, I've never thrown down like a serious gauntlet. All my challenges are stupid, you know. But
Stupid high school things.
I mean, yeah, but also as an adult, you know, sometimes, you know, you do stupid challenges with your buddies or
Okay, I'm gonna
what.
have to let me explain this phrase, and then I would really love for Jason to share one of these
I'm trying to
stupid times he's
figure out which one
thrown.
is appropriate to share without me having to click that explicit warning button when I post this episode.
All right, well, I talk, you think, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so it actually origins, of course, to the medieval times, and knights would literally throw the gauntlet or their metal glove onto the ground to challenge someone. It was usually kind of an insult, but you were kind of expected to literally pick up the gauntlet and then take the challenge.
So is this in any way related to like, you know, maybe it's a little bit past medieval times, but when gentlemen used to smack each other with their gloves to like start a duel? Have you heard this? Like they would take off their glove and, you
Like
know,
a boxing
no,
glove or like a glove glove?
like a, I don't know, like a leather glove or like a, just a wearing, I don't know, a wearing glove is not a thing, but it's a glove you wear. No, they would take it off and they would smack somebody and say, "I challenge you to a duel."
I mean, I've seen like silly kids or boys in general doing that just for fun. I don't know necessarily that
You see a lot of silly boys challenging each other to a duel?
like smacking each other with gloves? Yeah, I've
No,
seen it.
this is like an old-timey thing, like an old Western.
Okay,
You would walk
no.
up and you would smack him with your leather glove and challenge him to a duel at high noon.
I'm guessing I don't watch a lot of Westerns. No, that
Okay.
doesn't ring a bell to me.
My guess is this is a variation of throwing down the gauntlet to smack somebody with your glove and challenge them to a duel.
I mean, possibly. So I found a very similar phrase that means quite the opposite that goes along with this. So have you ever heard run the gauntlet?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've seen this, especially in like sports. If you go through, like, you get to the playoffs or you have like a really tough schedule that season, say, "Oh, this team really ran through the gauntlet." You know?
Okay, so I like how you said that because one of the ways that it's used is in it's like a rite of passage and like sports and things of that sort, but it actually dates back to more of a way of punishing prisoners.
Okay. How would. Like by
So
making them play sports, you fill in the blanks.
no, so what would happen is running the gauntlet would require like a prisoner or as a punishment in the British Navy where the officers or the guards would stand on either side, and the prisoner or the sailor or whatever would have to run through or go through this passageway, literally getting beat with whatever weapon they had on them, like a club or literally anything they had with them. That's what they were using. It was like a form of punishment. But that is used in sports in a little bit of a different way, more as like a rite of passage.
So I think that it's used in sports as a literal way too, because I think this is like a football drill. Like you, maybe like a running back or somebody, where you'd run through and there'd be like that row of people with their pads, you know, and they're all bumping you and you got to make it to the end. Or even they make like a mach not a machine, but like a piece of equipment that does this, and it's equipped with a bunch of like padded rods that you got to run through.
Did that pop out at you or something,
Yes,
like
well,
randomly?
they sort of retract and pop out and things like
Oh,
that.
okay.
So that would be like, you know, the exercise version of running the gauntlet.
But I read this also used figuratively as
Oh, no,
well
it's
in
absolutely, yeah,
terms of
like I
like
said,
just kind of like you said going through a difficult.
season. Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that same word being used in a different way with like a different verb in front of it, you know?
Yeah, I wish we still had gauntlets. I mean, Thanos brought back the gauntlet, but other than that, nobody's rocking gauntlets anymore.
I think they're good where they're at. We don't need to bring them back.
Should we bring the gauntlets back?
No, there's enough of the styles and trends coming back. Those don't need to come back. They can stay in the medieval times.
What if Justin Timberlake made a song called I'm Bringing Gauntlets Back? Bringing gauntlets back. They're rolling so much right now. Oh, man, we got to get this YouTube stream going, guys.
All right.
The disrespect I feel.
Let's see what you have to share so you can stop singing a Justin Timberlake made-up song here.
All right. So to be caught red-handed, this is super common. You know what it means, right? If you're caught red-handed.
I just picture our little one. He's often caught red-handed doing something he shouldn't be doing.
All right. So there's a very widely accepted origin to this, which isn't exactly true. So to be caught red-handed, like you said, you're caught doing something you shouldn't be doing, right? So a lot of people connect this to like murder, right? It's blood on your hands. Like you literally have the blood on your hands. You're caught red-handed, right? The police have you, the victim's blood on your hands, you know. But there's actually a less violent origin to this. Goes all the way back to, you know, medieval times when they would dye wool, like, to make clothes, you know?
Okay.
And sometimes people would try to steal the wool, right? And if you were caught with the dye on your hands, you were caught red-handed because you were either, like, working without permission or you were, like, stealing the wool to sell on your own, you know? So it's still theft, right? It's still a crime, but it's not murder, right? But it somehow got more widely associated with, you know, murder and blood on your hands when it was originally just dye from wool.
I guess it doesn't relate to medieval times whatsoever, but when I think of that, I think of like whenever we watch those like heist movies and they put the dye bags inside of the money.
Yeah.
And whenever they're trying to find the culprit, it's like if you have the dye all over your hands that had bursted, you're the one that.
Or usually in movies, it's like this blue dye all over their face, and they look like a smurf.
Right.
Yeah. That guy robbed the bank.
Right.
But yeah, no, so it's funny because it's something we say, but it actually goes, it's in legal documents as well. You know, old Scottish law have, you know, the phrase red-handed in there when they would reference somebody that they caught in the act of a crime. Not necessarily, you know, wool or murder, like the, you know, the ones I just described, but just any crime. Right, in Scottish law, they would say red-handed. So we're seeing, you know, old-timey Scottish law already use it as an idiom.
So maybe I didn't get this part, but so when they would dye the wool, was it actually the color red, or they were just using that color red to express getting caught with the dye in your hands?
No, it would be that color, and I'm sure they were just like, you know,
I think red is just one of those colors that like stand out.
Yes.
Like if I say caught blue-handed, doesn't really have the same.
Well, that
emphasis?
I would imagine at that time it was like one of the more widely available people that wore red. It was bright. It was vibrant. I could have probably dug a little bit deeper, but I'm just thinking of this right now. It was, you know, it's a social status, right? So if you were going to steal it or try to make it to sell it, you would want to do the high end stuff, right? You're not stealing wool for peasants, right?
That's true.
So probably red would be a color that they would have. And I mean, that's just me spitballing. I didn't actually dig that deep into, you know, that part of it. But I mean, it makes sense to me. And, I mean, technically speaking, I'm a historian. So that's, you know, I said it. So it's got to be a fact, right?
Oh, boy.
But we see it come up. Once again, it starts popping up in a lot of things outside of law books in like the 1800s and, you know, 1900s, and it becomes a common phrase that people are using, especially with the popularity of like, you know, crime dramas and things like that. So it's here to stay.
All right. And I have one that I thought was really cute, but I didn't think it related to medieval times, but it does. Wear your heart on your sleeve. Are you familiar with this one?
Yeah, it means you're soft.
It's to openly display one's emotions. Doesn't mean you're soft. It just means you have a heart, okay?
I just said that to sound tough. Like, I'm really emotional, guys, if you know me. Look at her. She's like, she doesn't know if she should call me out on this podcast. No,
I
I'm.
mean, it depends on the time of day.
Sure.
It depends on the day of the week. I don't know.
All right, so break it down for us.
Okay, so there are two possible origins. One of them was that during medieval jousting competitions or tournaments, the knight would have like a handkerchief or a scarf, as like a token of a woman's love. And they would put it on their sleeve to show their affection toward that woman. So that was literally wearing their emotion toward a woman on their sleeve. So that one makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so this one, now that you said it out loud, you remember that old Heath Ledger movie, A Knight's Tale?
Yes.
So that kind of makes me think of that because I remember he was going after that lady and he asked for like a token of their affection and she gave him a handkerchief and he tied it to his lance, but it wouldn't surprise me if, most knights tied it to their sleeve to show.
And I personally feel like I think that's like an honorable thing, I guess, to do to the late for the lady. But I feel like man to man, that makes you, I don't know, I wouldn't say it makes you look weak, but I think it's like makes you look vulnerable.
Yes and no. Maybe 20, 30 years ago, but at least a lot of the men I know, we can speak openly about emotions and stuff, so.
No, I just meant like if you were jousting with another male and you're over here wearing this handkerchief for a woman and the other guy is not, I think it may look like to the other guy maybe you're more vulnerable than he is, because I don't know, you have someone to go home to or something. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill here. I don't know which.
So another theory is that it dates back to like the precursor to Valentine's Day. It goes back to the Roman festival of Lupercalia, or Calia. I'm pronouncing wrong and I apologize. During this festival, the men would draw names of women from a box and then wear these names on their sleeves to like display their affection for them. So either way, you're wearing a name or you're wearing something of that woman on your physical
So if I
shirt.
ha yes, and if I had to guess, I would say that one was born from the other, right? I know the medieval times origin is true, right? Knights did do that.
And I probably, yeah. And then after that, other people did it. And then I think,
Well, once you
oh.
stop jousting, you probably find a new way to wear your lover's name, and if you're not going to tie it around your sleeve because you're not jousting anymore, what else can you do, right? Like you said, wear it around this festival. Kind of show pride in you and your lady.
Well, and then just to piggyback on how one of your other phrases gained its momentum, this was the phrase wear your heart on your sleeve also was mentioned in Othello from William
Ooh,
Shakespeare.
Billy Shakespeare strikes again.
In which he said, the character Iago says, "For when my outward action doth demonstrate the native act and figure of my heart, in compliment extern, it's not long after, but I will wear my heart upon my sleeve, for Dawes et Pecksat, I am not what I am." So for in this case, Lagos is revealing his emotions openly. So that's just, and then we know that once it's in print, especially from Shakespeare, it kind of gains its more figurative notion.
Well, yeah, well, not only because Shakespeare's, it's studied in high schools, it's studied in college, they've made TV shows and movies. Actually, there's a movie based on Othello, right? Not Othello, but it's like a more
It's
modern.
O.
Yeah, it was Josh Hartnett, and
Yeah, I want to say it's Julia Stiles, but I don't
it is
think
Julia
is it
Stiles, I think.
okay.
Yeah, and actually, the other one I was talking about, my Shakespeare quote. What was my Shakespeare quote? Oh, is it the break the ice quote? Yeah, that's from The Taming of the Shrew. Do you know what movie that was based on that?
Oh my goodness, you ask me this all the time and then I never remember. Nope. Listeners, let's not wait for me to try to come up with this name here.
It's 10 Things I Hate About You.
I love that movie. Another Julia Stiles movie.
Yes. Okay.
All right, take us home. What do you got for us?
All right, so last but not least is to be saved by the bell. So I chose this one, not because I'm a huge Saved by the Bell fan, even though I am. But this was actually one that gets commonly misconstrued, right? So I saw this, I want to say I saw it online somewhere, probably a TikTok. And then somebody at work brought this up to me, but there was this really, really cool old-timey medieval kind of, I guess, yeah, more or less just a coffin, right? So medicine wasn't that great back in the day, and oftentimes they would bury people, not oftentimes, that's not correct to say. Occasionally they would bury people that were not dead. They
Okay,
were
how does that happen? 'Cause I mean, even in medieval times, wasn't there someone who had to declare death? Like check there's a pulse
Well,
type
yeah,
of
but there
thing?
was
Like
just, there was a lot of things that can make you pass out. You know, you go unconscious, you get sick, you know, you like
go into a
coma.
coma.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely. All of those things. And they only had the resources that they had. So sometimes they would bury you and you would not be dead, right? So there was this coffin that's equipped with a bell. And if you happen to wake up inside this coffin, because maybe you came out of your coma or you regain consciousness for whatever reason, you would ring this bell, and then the grave, you know, the people working the night shift at the graveyard, or people working the graveyard shift, get it? Overnight at the graveyard. Anyways, they would hear this bell, they would dig you up, and you were saved by the bell, right? So, like I said, I saw that on TikTok. My buddy at work brought it up to me, and I was like, oh man, that's so cool. I gotta do this. Only to find out those coffins existed. The whole bell thing and the graveyard digging you, all of that is true. Every word I just said is true. But there's no direct correlation between that happening and the phrase to be saved by the bell.
That's a pretty cool thing. I would hate to. That's like the most terrifying way to,
Oh, it's absolutely one of the most terrifying ways to die. Yes.
like, awful. But okay, so tell us, where does it really come from then?
It's much simpler, not nearly as cool. It's from boxing. When the end of a boxing round hits and you go, you know, ding ding, it means the other guy gets to stop punching you in the face for a minute.
Now that when does how does when does that bell ring? Is it like a time frame, like after so many times, or after so many, like? Hits like it's
No, it's by rounds, and depending on the type of, if you're talking, you know, boxing or UFC, is it 5 rounds? Is it 12 rounds? You know, there's a lot of different kind of formats. But yeah, it's a timed round, so you know it'll be X amount of minutes. No matter what's happening, when those minutes are up, the bell rings and the fighters have to stop fighting. So
okay.
if you were in trouble and you were getting, you know, worked, you literally get saved by the bell. So like I
Ah,
said,
okay.
the graveyard thing is a crazy, interesting story and
But unfortunately,
100%
there's no
true.
correlation to
But there's just nothing that ever puts that phrase and that action together. Whereas the boxing thing does happen, right? The people, you know, commentating on the fight would say it. Newspapers would say it. You know,
okay.
yeah, it would come up all the time for boxing.
I wish the other one had
I
more
want
logic
the
because
other one
that's
to be
so
true.
dope.
I want the other one to be true so bad. And you know what? Maybe it is. It's just there's nothing that connects the two. And that could just mean because when they said it back then, you know, like we said, it never made its way into a famous book, or you know, Shakespeare never used it, so you know, who knows? But both are cool, but no historical evidence to support the graveyard thing. More than likely, the boxing connection. Ooh, I think we just did six, right?
You saw, what's our listener request today, though? We have one more for our listeners.
Ooh, so six plus a listener request, that is one heck of a way to wrap up season two. So our listener request is Nest Egg, right? So we have Memorial Day, and I guess if you're listening when we release them, this makes sense. But if you're listening to them at different times, this doesn't make sense. But we just had Memorial Day, so we had some family over, and we were talking about, you know, starting a nest egg, right? And then instantly I was like, nest egg? What the heck? And then my cousin shouts out, put it on your podcast, like he's making fun of me. But guess what? I put it on my podcast. So what's a nest egg, Lisa?
I have no idea. You're gonna have to teach me this origin because I have no idea
Well,
what
you
it
know what
even
it means,
means.
though, right?
It just means that like money you put aside.
That's it, right? It's money you put aside. Usually you're saving for a vacation,
Yeah,
retirement.
college or
Sure, yeah.
something. Yeah.
Okay, so couple different meanings of this. There is a literal meaning. There is something actually called a nest egg, right?
Like a physical egg that's in a
Oh,
nest. Okay.
absolutely a physical egg in a nest.
You should see the excitement on his face to tell me about
Because
this.
I did not know that this was a real thing. So, and again, all of our listeners who maybe have some sort of farming background are sitting there like, these idiots. Yes, these idiots. I did not know. So, what they would do is they would take a real egg and they would place it in the hen's nest.
Are we talking like an egg? Okay, are we talking about
Like an egg, like a farm egg. Like,
like an egg that I would crack into a pan? Or are we
yeah,
talking about
not
like
a
it?
chick, okay? An egg.
Well, oh,
So they would place it in there, and the sight of it was believed to stimulate the hen's like reproductive system and sort of, lead to the hen producing more eggs, right? So you can use a real egg or a fake egg for this purpose, but essentially it was an
like a
egg.
fake plastic egg, are we talking about? Like what?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the hen could tell you. Farmers used both, a fake
Okay.
one or a real one.
I'm just thinking, oh, I guess back then they weren't refrigerating their eggs. So I'm just thinking, like, I feel like if the hen were to sit on it and it was from the fridge or something like that, like the temperature itself would probably not.
No, well, you don't go straight from the ice box to the chicken coop, Lisa. Jesus. She's so mad right now.
This is almost over now.
No, so yeah, it's just a way to kind of encourage the hen and kind of boost the body chemistry to start laying more eggs, right? But figuratively, we talk about it, it's a savings analogy, right? It's when you need to save up for something big, you have to start small, right? So for us, it symbolizes like a starting point, right? It's that little bit you start saving,
Okay.
and you get it with the compound interest, or you keep adding on to it every month, whatever works, but eventually you need that something little to grow into something big, right? So it has, some historical context, right? When you talk about, oh, where do these things come from, right? It's been in books. It's been around since the 1600s, but more commonly in the 19th century with farming, we see it used, more, I guess I would say, more common, right? Because especially once farming kind of starts fading away, those people that once lived on farms are now living in the city, and they have that same mentality, right? Something little that you need to grow into something big. So that's your nest egg. It's again one of my favorite things about this podcast, seeing the figurative versus the literal meaning, or how something started off as one, but now we kind of use it in a completely different manner. But I don't know, if you're listening, start your nest egg, guys. I don't know about you, but I got a kid that's going to start college soon, and my nest egg ain't big enough. All right, guys. With that said, thank you for listening. Rate and review us. Go back and listen to some of your favorite season two episodes while you wait for season three to come out.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Phrase, and seeing that we will be recording over the summer for our fall season three. If you have any phrases that you're dying to know the meaning of, or any suggestions, or anything you'd like us to shout out, please feel free to either, if you know us personally, send us a message or reach out to us on any platform you listen so that we can add that to our next season.
Yeah. And again, if you're in the Andersonville area, go hit up Fat Chris's Pizza and such. I can't stress enough how awesome it was having them sponsor season two for us. And hopefully we have them back for season three. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.